Donald Trump delivers a convention speech in Cleveland with a theme of law and order. Corrine Brown speaks out as federal investigators probe her finances. And controversy over a Duval judge's remarks. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Catch the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. And just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, the story and the music of Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald on a local stage. Plus, it's boiling hot right now, but this weekend you can experience Christmas in July at one local festival. We'll tell you about it, all of that ahead. But first, it's Friday. Do you have that Friday feeling? I think we all do, as our weekly media roundtable joins us to talk about the top headlines of the week. Sebastian Kitchen is here from the Florida Times-Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Fred Matthews, who used to blog at The Examiner. Good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa.
Claire Goforth, editor of Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And Mark Judson, he's managing editor of UNF's Spinnaker.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks, everyone, for being here. Lots to discuss, from the latest in the federal investigation around Rep. Corrine Brown and her remarks, now out on video. Also, controversy this week over a local judge's remarks that have gotten him reassigned, all of that and more. But we begin the hour with our top story as GOP nominee Donald Trump closed out the Republican convention in Cleveland last night with a lengthy acceptance speech focused on law and order, as Trump promised to do everything from eradicate crime to build a border wall, defeat ISIS, rejuvenate the economy, and prod U.S. allies. Let's listen.
To all Americans tonight, in all of our cities and in all of our towns, I make this promise. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. God bless you and good night. I love you.
Trump's speech capped off one wild week at the Quicken Loans Arena. Controversies over plagiarism, Ted Cruz's speech, dissent from the floor, and much more. We begin the hour with a closer look at the just-wrapped-up GOP convention and a look ahead to the Democrats' gathering next week in Philadelphia. As it's expected, Hillary Clinton will announce her running mate probably today or tomorrow right here in Florida. Get on the line now with your thoughts about the race. Let us know what your thoughts and comments are at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Mark Judson, let's begin with you. Your thoughts about the convention and where do we begin? So much happened over the last few days.
Well, it was an unconventional convention, to say the least. But at the end of the day, I mean, it really just felt like the usual Trump, where we're just seeing him branding himself more and more, and we saw him every single day of the convention, and really the focus was just on him, reality stars that he worked with, his family, and just Trump, Trump, Trump.
Sebastian Kitchen.
It was an interesting week. You're right. I don't even know where to start. The speech last night was interesting. It was long, and I think some people said
75 minutes.
It was. He went through a lot. He didn't get into much detail, but I think most people would argue that this isn't really the time for that. But the it was interesting. The crowd seemed to have the crowd in his hands, which hadn't been the case all week with some of the speakers. But some of the proposals he talked about are not overly conservative proposals. So it'll be interesting over the next few weeks, you know what all he rolls out. But he did, again, in his angry speech, he did emphasize law and order often.
Very strong influence, Fred, on law and order. Critics of the speech said it departed markedly from past Republican gatherings. When you think of Ronald Reagan saying it's morning in America, Trump's narrative is that it's nighttime in America, that things are bad and that only he can fix them.
Well, the Washington Post headline just said it was a dark speech, which it was. I mean, the whole week was relatively dark, but that's what they wanted. That's apparently what the party wanted. As he touted, he got the most Republican votes for any candidate in what, forever, running his race. He pointed that out. He spent a great deal of time pointing out all of the great things that he's been able to do, and as did everybody else throughout the week. But, you know, it was a convention and a speech that had what? It had enthusiasm, but it wasn't exciting. As you looked at the crowd throughout the week, and even as you looked through the speeches, even Ivanka's speech, it was a good speech, but you saw people playing with their cell phones. You didn't see the
rah-rah. To be fair, we see that and everywhere today.
Well, yeah, we do. But it just wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the oomph that you wanted. But look. We're the first of the weekend to get to talk about this campaign and kicking off, and it achieved everything that I think Mr. Trump wanted to achieve. And the big highlight of the night for me was, again, him stepping out of character with the LGBTQ comment that he made to the convention and then thanking them for allowing him to make it and getting an applause line for it. It was a big change. A big sea change for the Republican Party and for the convention.
Now, let's talk about that, Claire Goforth, because the Republican Party platform is seen by the LGBT community as extremely hostile to their movement toward full equality in this society. At the same time, the CEO of PayPal, Peter Thiel, an openly gay man, he gave a speech last night before Trump spoke. And as Fred said, during Trump's acceptance address, he promised to protect LGBT Americans from attacks like the shooting at the Orlando nightclub Pulse that killed 49 people. And the crowd mostly applauded that. But again, that differs from the platform in terms of Republican policies and position papers on this issue.
Yes, it absolutely does. I mean, they adopted a platform that doesn't even support same-sex marriage, which is the law of the land. The interesting thing I thought about last night's speech, other than it was a bit dull for Donald Trump standards, was that he seemed to be moving to the center. And what he always got the nomination is by courting the extreme right-wing vote. Now that it's time to win the presidential election, presumably, he's going to be courting those swing voters who are more centrist. And I just think it's going to seem inconsistent. It's going to alienate the people that have pushed him into the nomination. And I'm not sure that it's going to go well for him in the end.
Well, and that is always the trick for a party and a nominee, Mark and Sebastian, as they transition from the primary to the general election. Last night, we saw Ivanka Trump also making moves in that direction when she introduced her father, talking about fairness in the workplace for women, the type of narrative you might more commonly hear at a Democratic convention. Now, as we look ahead, Hillary Clinton is expected to announce it's being buzzed about Virginia Senator Tim Kaine as her vice presidential running mate. That announcement could come as soon as this afternoon in Tampa at a scheduled campaign appearance for the Democrats. Mark Judson, your thoughts now as the convention or as the nominating process and the campaign rolls ahead to the Democrats.
I mean, it definitely seems like it's going to go towards Tom Kaine, and it would make sense too, just given her options that they viewed as key. I mean, he's a Democratic governor or a former Democratic governor from a state that is a swing state. The Democratic governor currently there would be able to choose his replacement in the Senate, so I think that they would maintain that seat, and that's very key. He speaks Spanish, so I think that that latches onto a demographic that the Democrats are really trying to get. So I think that it really makes sense, and it seems to be going that way.
Sebastian.
He's more moderate on a few issues than some of the other potential selections, but he's well liked and well respected in Democratic circles. And most of the people on the short list, him, former Iowa governor and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, Labor Secretary Perez, and some of the others. So they're most of the list, I think, is pretty well liked and pretty well respected in Democratic circles. And everything I've read, and this has been a lot more secretive process than the other side, but, you know, this always starts to leak out towards the end, and some of these officials have to start to make plans. But it'll be interesting. I think she tried to make it clear that it's somebody that she has to be able to work with for the next 4 to 8 years, and it's not going to be somebody who might fit a certain type of demographic.
And Kaine can help the Democrats win Virginia, which is one of the few swing states still left in this country, besides Florida, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be very interesting in Florida over the next several months. I was Mike Pence's speech, I thought, was very telling for what the Republican Party is trying to get out of Donald Trump now. It's just like, let's stick with the party line. It was so party line that it was a little bit mundane. And there was even a commenter on PBS, I swear, that the words, Mike Pence will do what he's told, were almost out of her mouth. And then she stopped herself and pivoted to something else. So that does seem like what is going on. They've put him with a nice establishment Republican to just make everyone relax, you know, don't worry, he's not that much of a wild card. Look, we've chained him to somebody who's gonna maybe keep him in line.
What about, though, the schism we saw, Fred, with Ted Cruz's speech, where he did not endorse Donald Trump and was booed off the stage? His wife Heidi had to be escorted out with security. Those divisions were laid bare before a national television audience. Will a Democrat's schisms between more progressive Democrats that supported Bernie Sanders and more establishment-oriented Democrats that supported Hillary Clinton, will we see that same type of schism play out in Philadelphia, or will they be more united? I think that's another question to watch.
I tend to think we won't see that. I mean, the Ted Cruz was a true WWE moment for the Republican convention, and you had, the candidate coming out to sort of take the spotlight off of the booing by showing up from right behind the curtain at just the right time. So, folks, you were caught between boos and yays for the nominee coming out. Look, you know, you can give Ted Cruz some credit for standing on principle, but how it will play out for him in 2 to 4 years is anybody's guess. I mean, this is a tough deal. Cruz ends up looking like an establishment Republican, doesn't he? I mean, he looks like that now, and this is not an establishment Republican's time for the party. I'm sorry.
All right, lots of calls as we talk about Donald Trump's convention speech last night. Hillary Clinton expected to announce her VP choice either today or tomorrow here in Florida. What are your thoughts about the campaign? And we'll go to some other news and notes from the week in a moment. But right now, the number to call us is 549-2937. Let's begin with John in Deerwood. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, beautiful. This is Hancock, John Hancock.
Okay. Are you a direct descendant of the one and only John Hancock, or is that no relation at all?
Beautiful, your instincts are right so often. But all of his children were murdered. He was a terrorist. He started a war.
Good question.
War for a good reason. In other words, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the violence brought equality. But when you like war because it makes money, then even John Hancock's going to call. I was on the phone with family, and they had all wanted to vote for Ted Cruz. I said, well, then why won't you listen to him? He should run with Rubio. They'll be heroes. But as Hancock, I've seen this before in a man named Hitler. And this kind of war doesn't steer towards equality. By the way, I'm obsessing about Orlando. I'm an openly gay man. But secondly,
let me ask you, what did you think of Donald Trump last night talking about moving the Republican Party toward a more inclusive position for LGBT Americans?
Orlando happened because of people like Trump, like Curry, like Tea Party conservatives, fundamentalists. I grew up in it. But my own family, I said, he's begging you. She said, no, he's saying conscious objector or whatever the phrase is. I am more like Archie Bunker than you realize. But I said, mother, he's saying that I'm not going to vote for either of them, but I don't want to say because they're going to shoot me. But no new taxes. Why would we give more tax money to people that are Tea Party conservative? They already lost billions of dollars.
Okay.
I say no new taxes until there's like 50% new people in every elected position.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, John.
I think the caller is sort of echoing some of the sentiments in the LGBT community that people don't trust Donald Trump. But, you know, to be fair, Donald Trump did say that he would try to protect LGBT people from attacks like the shooting in Orlando. I'm not sure how the president can really affect local law enforcement other than maybe with I don't know, budgetary something. But I don't think people trust him. And, you know, what's more, some of the points that Trump was making last night about how dangerous the United States has become, he pointed out that the murder rate in Chicago is high. It's actually not in the top 10 for cities in the United States. And that there was an uptick in the murder rate in the 50 largest cities in the first 6 months of last year. But that is not very statistically significant because right now the murder rate is at historic lows in the United States. So, I mean, these and many questions will be answered as people sort of dissect that 75-minute long speech that he gave last night.
Mark Judson.
And I think that even if Trump has tried to kind of play his cards in favor of the LGBTQ community, I think that there's a lot of concern also in his VP choice. I mean, who is someone who does not have the best track record with that community. So I think that that's another call for concern from them.
Gil on the South Side. Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. And the panel. I just wanted to say I sat through that 75-minute narcissistic speech by Donald Trump. I was so unimpressed. It was a speech without plans. And I've always said, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. The bottom line is he gave us absolutely no prescription for how he was going to become the biggest crime fighter since Superman. He said he's going to lower taxes, and then on top of lowering taxes, he's actually going to increase our infrastructure, increase our trade, increase our jobs. Where is this money coming from? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. He's a person that actually doesn't do his homework. He hasn't had to because he's always had hundreds of millions of dollars, and he could get somebody else to crib for him. He has no experience in the political realm, and the lies that he told about Clinton, he gets away with because she's a personality. She doesn't get a chance to take him to court. But Clinton's email scandal, it's clearly political. Colin Powell had his own private server. Condoleezza Rice had her own private server. Jeb Bush had his own private server. How come none of them got the kind of treatment that Hillary Clinton has gotten?
Okay, thanks, it's Gil.
It's ridiculous.
Thanks, Gil. And to be clear, with the emails controversy, the investigation mainly centered, it's my understanding, on the fact that the server was set up at her home. That did differ somewhat from Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice's setup. But getting to Gil's point, Sebastian, as Donald Trump seeks to win over undecided voters, can he make the sale? Can he get more specific about this tough talk? Because people that are not inclined to vote for Donald Trump are saying the same things as Gil. How are you going to bring about all of these grand promises?
No, he did. He mentioned a lot of things last night in an hour and 15 minutes, but he didn't get into specifics. A lot of times that doesn't happen in conventions. But I didn't see much. Claire talked about him moving towards the middle, but I don't necessarily. You see that on gay rights and some other issues, but you don't necessarily see on immigration. That didn't help at all. His daughter talked before him about reaching out to women, as you said, Melissa. But at the same time, when you see some of the rhetoric and some of the comments he's made, disparaging comments about women over the years, you've never heard Donald Trump say that. So I think he has a long way to go to get to some of those areas to win over undecided voters. I think he gave a fair amount of red meat to the base last night. I didn't see where he made very many overtures other than to the LGBTQ community that really reached out to anybody else last night.
And Fred, as Hillary Clinton gets her turn in the spotlight now and deflects criticisms of her tenure, she will have the same task. Appealing to a general election audience.
Well, she will, but what we would expect from someone who's been in the political arena for most of her adult life now is that we would expect a larger adherence to the party platform. We would expect to hear a much more coherent of exactly how it's going to get done and a more realistic look at what it will take to get it done. What we got from the Republican nominee was what I want to do, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to do. It was not what we're going to do. I mean, but this is what apparently the Republican Party wanted. This is what they wanted. They voted for it. In droves, they voted for it. I would say the majority of Floridians are excited about the Republican nominee, and they're going to vote for him. I mean, they're going to vote for him. So apparently this is what they wanted. They didn't want specifics. They want this grand theme of law and order. I don't know how many times law and order was repeated last night. But for those who listen to law and order, it has an entire different context from what he was talking about.
Let's take one more call. Matt is on the line. Hi, Matt. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Melissa?
Okay.
I'm a party leader, elected official delegate for Bernie Sanders. And I just really, I want to know, like, what kind of businessman would actually spend more and take in less and plan to succeed? And the answer to that is probably one that relies on bankruptcy as a business plan. Bernie and Hillary have already started coming together because they both believe that America is great, and together we can make it better.
Now, let me ask you, you're a delegate to the Philadelphia Convention?
Yes.
And do you expect unity on the convention floor for the Democrats? Or do you think that the divisions we saw throughout the primary process might still present issues for the Democrats?
I think, you know, there's going to be a little bit of steam let out, but I don't think it's going to be anything near what you saw with the RNC, which was just embarrassing. There's always going to be, you know, discourse and things like that. But whenever we get a platform that is 90% of what my fellow Berners want, you know, I think that an A-minus is a pretty good grade. It got me through college, so I think that's fine.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Claire, go forth.
You know, I wanted to circle back to the point that Fred made in Donald Trump talking about law and order again and again in his speech last night. When you talk about law and order and imply that we're in a dangerous place and we need to increase enforcement of our laws, I mean, we have the largest prison industrial in the world. We have the highest rate of incarceration in the world. And if you're going to talk about law and order and putting more people behind bars, you're only going to exacerbate that problem. I think that's going to work against him, especially with the African-American vote, because that community is hit so hard by these laws and by this unjust enforcement. So I wonder who is calling the shots behind the scenes in the Trump campaign, and it's probably Donald Trump, and I don't know that that is really the best strategy to win an election.
Well, we're going to talk about some other news and notes from the week. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Lots of calls, emails, and tweets. The number to call in, 549-2937. And also making headlines this week here in Jacksonville, Corrine Brown and her attorneys have filed a new motion in federal court to force federal prosecutors to disclose any evidence they have that could help her case. Representative Brown indicted 2 weeks ago on federal charges that accuse her and her chief of staff of using a questionable charity to funnel some $800,000 to their personal accounts. Prosecutors call it a slush fund. In a video she released this week, Representative Brown said the truth will come out, her side of the story will be told, and she even compared her struggle to that of Martin Luther King Jr. Let's listen.
Martin Luther King was under attack, and I've been under attack. And let me just say, I'm not the first African-American that's been under attack, and I won't be the last. But keep in mind, I have a story to tell, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the story.
Sebastian Kitchen, Corrine Brown, for some time now has been saying that this investigation into her finances and her charity is politically and racially motivated. Your thoughts?
I know she likes to make the argument. If I was her position, I would probably make the same argument. But the evidence is laid out in court documents and is laid out in great reporting by my colleagues at the Times Union shows that there was this fund that took in hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that most of that wasn't going to the nonprofit. It was not registered as a nonprofit. It wasn't going to education for children, and she was using the influence that she had to do that. So I see why she's doing, you know, what she's doing. It's rough timing for her. It's a reelection campaign, so she has to do what she can do. She's reaching out to her base, and she's trying to convince those people.
Mark Judson.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree that the evidence is laid out pretty clear, and it's really tough to deny it. But she's not wrong in the sense that, you know, she has come under attack like this before, and I'm sure that a lot of the people that are speaking out against her, it is racially motivated and it is politically motivated because it is a re-election year, but there is a lot of evidence there.
Yeah, Fred Matthews.
It is a Democratic Justice Department, though, which I think people need to keep in mind. It's a Democratic-appointed U.S. attorney, a Democratic-appointed attorney general, and a Democratic president.
Yeah, and Fred, let me ask you about all the elements of this, your thoughts, because the evidence that the feds have laid out is exhaustive. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that's the whole point. And that's the unfortunate part of us discussing this, just like we would discuss a murder trial before the trial takes place, before the jury pool, before the jury has been selected. And in federal court, remember, nobody gets to see what we can get to see on the local level. The discovery issue is totally in the hands of a group of federal attorneys, which most of us don't get to see walking the street like we can at the state attorney's office downtown. And so that's the point here of trying to get discovery, trying to get the information out. The state attorney, the U.S. attorney, had the advantage of releasing all that they wanted to release from what they discovered and dripped it over the past year, so that when they got to the point of actually putting forth a conviction complaint, then, okay, of course, oh, man, that's great, that's huge. How can you get over that? So the attorneys for the defendant, which hopefully none of us will ever be, are in the position of having to try to sift through that and get their word out to the potential jury pool so that they can understand what's going on here. What does the U.S. attorney do? They go back to the judge and says, no, we can't let that get out. Why not? Why not? It's the same evidence that you've been dripping for the last year. The person A that you let get out, the same thing. You squeezed the two other defendants to the point where they've already pleaded out. So now you're down to the big kahuna, and we've got to get it. This is a game, and we can't play into it as those who watch this process and those who may be potential jurors, because this is a game that's being played out. And when you're a U.S. congressman, the biggest fish that you can get these days, outside of a presidential candidate, you try to get them for all they would. This could probably.
You mean you're a U.S. prosecutor?
You're a U.S. prosecutor, but if you're a U.S. congressman or the next or a senator, this is a big fish for a prosecutor to try to get. And guess what? This could probably all go away if you just wouldn't run for re-election.
You think so?
Well, it's happened four or five times before.
So you think if she were to retire, this investigation wouldn't be so aggressive?
It would not be so aggressive because it wouldn't be. That's the whole point. You're a lawmaker. I mean, it's the same thing in the Fullwood case. You're a lawmaker. Why are you? Who's the victim of the crime? What's the victim of the crime? How many years are stacked up on this thing? 200 and something years. I mean, who's the crime? Who's the victim here? And I think those are the things you play into. If you go before the evidence is presented to a trial, and if you accept everything that the prosecution gives, we as observers have to look at this because this game plays out over and over and over again.
Claire.
And we do the same thing.
I mean, Fred's right. The timing is very suspicious. It's hard to say there isn't political motivation. And although the Justice Department is under the president, it is a nonpartisan department.
Why would this Justice Department have a motivation to bring down Corrine Brown over anybody else who's in Congress? Why would this investigation be... What would be the overarching agenda beyond...
Because they can, because maybe she's made some missteps. I don't know if she's guilty or innocent, but Fred's right. I mean, they've been dripping out this evidence over the period of a year, and it does seem politically motivated. And you're in the Justice Department, you know, it's a big catch to get a congressperson. It's a big deal. And if she has done these things, then she should be held accountable for them. But with the way it's been timed, right when she's running for election, it doesn't smell right to a lot of people.
Okay, let's talk about something else that flared up this week. And the number to join us as we wrap up this roundtable is 549-2937. Did you hear about the controversy over Circuit Judge Mark Holsey? He was reassigned after a commission found he made racist and sexist comments to his staff. He will now be in the probate division. Hulsey accused of using epithets to refer to a female staff attorney and allegedly saying African Americans should go back to Africa. He could face sanctions. However, Sebastian Kitchen, Judge Hulsey, is denying all of this. And it was also interesting to see that not only did a group of black pastors call for his removal, a group of African-American attorneys held a news conference to support the judge.
I thought that was a really interesting situation, that early on when this was kind of floating around the courthouse, that, there was the rally to say that he needed to be removed. And then on the day that this came down from the State Judicial Commission, that all of a sudden, very, very quickly, a group of black attorneys got together, stopped basically what they were doing to get together and defend him. So I think that's just a really interesting situation. I don't think you necessarily see that very often, that they went out of their way to defend Judge Hulsey.
Yeah. Mark Judson, there are wrinkles to this story. We'll have to see how it ends, but certainly it's not the first judge this year in Florida to undergo a formal investigation. The state Supreme Court has been taking a much harsher view of judges' allegedly inappropriate behavior, cracking down more often, it seems, on judges that they feel are not living up to the standards of the bench.
Yeah, it's not even just the issues that were really brought to light by those specific groups against Hulsey, too. I mean, if you look through the inquiry, I mean, there was a lot of allegations of misuse of his staff attorneys. There was issues with him giving his staff basically work to do on their own personal time. So there's just a lot of cases that were really stacked up against him in this situation. So,
Fred.
Mark Hulsey and Mark Mahan are second, third generation attorneys from very well-established firms and families in this town. And it's a little shocking to many folks. But look, again, we don't know judges, do we? We don't know judges because we don't pay attention to them when they're on the ballot. They're nonpartisan racing. I mean, they can't say anything about what they do and what they really think when they're running. So once they get on the bench, the only persons who get the chance to see what the judge actually thinks is the defendant who stands before them and the one or two of us who cover county and circuit court to see what they do every day. And this is an evidence of that. This dripped out from his staff and for those who were close to him who were tired of it. And, yeah, I can imagine that a number of people in the Perkins Bar Association would stand with Mark because they know him as a good guy. But is he really?
Hmm. Yeah, we don't know what was said behind closed doors, but let's go to Terry in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, regarding the indictment of Corrine Brown, I just wanted to remind the panel and the listeners that this indictment is a federal indictment. And the Justice Department is a Democratic Justice Department, so I would think that certainly before they indict somebody in Congress, that approval would go all the way to the top of the Justice Department.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. Thanks for that. Quickly, Mark on the north side. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, quickly about Corrine Brown. Even if it's racially motivated, and it may very well be, but I don't see how it is, if she has done something wrong, she's done something wrong. And, you know, she has a history of these double dealings, kind of backroom, you know, money things, going back to, you know, before she was elected, when she was a travel agent. She was investigated about some things. And there was a thing with her daughter in a car, and it just goes back forever. And if you're an African-American and you know that the justice system is out to get you, shouldn't you be twice as clean as anybody else? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
All right. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And lots of comments about a very busy news week. We appreciate everybody weighing in. But finally, it is our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Well, only in Florida do thieves get busted for stealing the boat that belongs to an infamous lion killer. 26-year-old Andrew Derwin of Marco Island under arrest after police say he stole and crashed a boat belonging to Walter Palmer, Dr. Walter Palmer. Palmer is the Minnesota dentist who sparked international fury for killing Cecil the Lion last summer. He shot the prize lion while on a hunting trip in Hwange National Park in Zimbabwe. Remember that? Turns out he had a boat in Florida, like a lot of doctors. But speaking of shootings, only in Florida will you get shot at while you're wandering around outside while playing Pokemon Go. Are any of you playing that, by the way?
No.
Okay.
I don't know, but I've seen a lot more people walking along the river with their phones up than I did a week ago.
I know, right? Well, this happened actually in the middle of the night in Flagler County. Deputies say a homeowner awoke to a noise outside his house and saw a car parked in front of his home with two teens inside. As they sped off, the man fired shots at the vehicle, but it turns out they were simply playing the wildly popular new smartphone app. The car.
I'll save you, Pikachu.
So that's your week. And thanks to our media panel, Fred Matthews, Mark Judson, Sebastian Kitchen, and Claire Goforth. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much
Thank
more
you.
Still to come.
This week on Invisibilia, we explore the power of clothing.
When you look in the mirror, you look like someone else, and then you feel like someone else.
The identities we take on.
Well, it's escapism.
How clothes can change us.
I was like a ghost, almost.
And even save us.
I was different. I was different all the way through.
I'm Hanna Rosin. That's on the next Invisibilia from NPR.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
You remember the Greek debt crisis? Yeah, so do the locals.
Last year, I had hope that something will change, that everything will go better. But now, there's no hope.
I'm Kai Rizdal, getting by in Athens, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Back in 1994, on Science Friday, we tried to imagine what robots of the future might look like.
I've heard these stories, you know, all over the years about, you know, we could make a robot like a squid or something. Well, you know, squids can't drive cars and squids don't work.
I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, a robot reboot, our new thinking about designing robots, all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Stage Aurora's upcoming production of Lewis and Ella by Trent Armand Kendall takes the stage Saturday night. Kendall wrote the show, and he also stars as the legendary Armstrong with Natasha Yvette Williams as Ella Fitzgerald. Trent Kendall on the line now with more about this free production. And good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. So this
is my morning voice. That's not what I really sound like.
I know. You'll be all warmed up by the time you take the stage. This is coming up on the 23rd, tomorrow night, at the Public Library, Downtown Library, 7 o'clock. Admission free of charge. Very exciting. Tell us what inspired this show, Lewis and Ella.
Well, as an actor, as a character man, I was looking for a vehicle that I felt was a natural gift. That I felt like was a sensible gift for my natural gifts. And I've always loved jazz, and I've always loved the story of Louis Armstrong, what he meant to African American culture, the impression that he made on jazz music early on that translated into pop and rock and roll later on. So once I started studying him, I realized that this was the show for me. And as far as Ella Fitzgerald, once I started studying Lewis's music and I realized that they had over 54 duets together, I said, well, I ought to be able to pull a show out of that.
There must be some amazing production numbers, the duets with you and Natasha Williams as Ella. And it's my understanding, too, that this is sponsored in part by an NEA Challenge America Fast Track grant. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, mostly what I know about it is that it's made possible by the National Endowment of the Arts, which is dedicated to not only keeping great music alive, but, you know, this grant particularly for a theatrical piece that is focused on African-American history as well. Although, I must say that the show itself is a particular interest to everybody. And that was the great thing about Louis Armstrong, that he was an ambassador for America to the rest of the world, and that's why the world fell in love with him, because he was one of the first people to cross color lines, not only musically, but politically and socially as well.
Sure, and it's exciting, too, that you'll be performing this under the umbrella of Stage Aurora, which typically highlights African-American actors and themes. This is being done at the Downtown Public Library Main Branch Saturday night, and it's free of charge. You don't often see that. So what prompted that decision?
I think it was Daryl Reuben Hall, who was the producer. He wanted to give back to the community because he had been blessed with this grant, and he's also blessing me by giving me an opportunity to get the show up on its feet in another light and all around. It's just a good decision. So it's nice sometimes when people give back when he could have easily charged at ticket prices. But I think he is open to donations for the theater company because they're doing such great work in the future. But the show itself, it's fast, it's funny, it's got some of the most popular tunes you ever heard, Cheek to Cheek, Stepping Out with My Baby, Skylark, What a Wonderful World. And it's not just a dated show. Rather than us going back in time, it's about bringing these two figures to present day, and it's going to be something that everybody can take away.
Absolutely. So many beautiful standards in this show, and it's a free play. So go see this musical, the new production of Lewis and Ella by Trent Armand Kendall, Saturday night at the Public Library's downtown Hicks Auditorium, 7 p.m. Admission free of charge, stageaurora.org for more. Trent Armand Kendall, congratulations. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek. Yes, heaven.
A little over 1 year ago, I announced my candidacy for president, and with your vote today, this stage of the presidential process has come to a close.
Today in Cleveland, Donald Trump accepts his party's nomination. We'll talk to a man who spent 18 months with Trump as the ghostwriter of his best-selling book, The Art of the Deal, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
As Florida school districts prepare students for success in a global knowledge-based economy, how does arts education factor into the plan? Join WJCT for Community Thread, The Politics of Arts Education, as we explore this issue and how advocates are working to ensure that diverse perspectives are represented in the development of new arts policies. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on August 4th.
This program is underwritten by the Ann McDonald Baker Family Foundation.
On the next Fresh Air.
The 2016 presidential election is going to be the first presidential election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act.
We talk with Ari Berman about his book, Give Us the Ballot, about how the Voting Rights Act has changed since its passage in 1965. And we'll talk about recent voting restrictions that critics say are discriminatory. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
What if your office worker yanks your underwear up as hard as she can? Another flushes your lunch down the toilet. Still another slaps you hard across the face. We wouldn't tolerate this at work, but we let it happen at school. On the next Snap Judgment, big girls don't cry. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
And most speeches
speeches that I did for him were for audiences of complete strangers. I would never see them again. This was an audience of everyone who mattered to my career, all the executives in the company, all of the communications department. Picture your worst personal walk of shame. This is like a professional walk of shame.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it is boiling hot outside right now, but this weekend you can actually enjoy a little Christmas in July. Spokeswoman Ann Urban is here with a preview of an enchanted Christmas village on Jacksonville's west side tomorrow in the middle of the summer. And this sounds really interesting. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And this is at the Keeler property on the west side on Normandy Boulevard, which I've never been to, but looking online, it looks absolutely beautiful.
It is. Thank you so much. It's 40 acres of just pristine. It's magical without anything there. I can't imagine once we have this enchanted Christmas village set up how unbelievable it's going to be for the community.
It's a place that is used for lots of different types of events and weddings, but you've made a decision to transform it into a Christmas zone.
We have.
What all's going to be there?
Well, you know, people don't know this yet in Jacksonville, but it was announced this week that Santa's actually been vacationing. His vacation home is on this property.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
That's why we're doing this, because he actually has his vacation home there. And,
yeah.
And he made a decision. He loves Jacksonville. He's been vacationing here for years. And he made this decision to go ahead and transform this beautiful 40 acres into a true enchanted Christmas village so he could share that holiday season with everyone here.
I can't blame Santa, but I'm surprised you've pulled him off his downtime for such a hard day of work. But anyway, you're going to have everything from Santa's workshop, photos with Santa, a hay maze, bouncy house, food court, food trucks, Christmas crafts, Christmas market, hay rides, all kinds of fun stuff. And by the way, this event tomorrow from 10 to 1 is free.
It is free. Tomorrow we are having a special visit by Santa, Mrs. Claus, and his head elf. And we will be revealing in renderings in the craft barn exactly what's to come in November. But we thought, what a great way for people to get some of those summer photos with Santa in his special summer outfits and really get to have fun while they're doing it and learn and see what's to come.
Very nice. And this is a preview of what you'll be unveiling in an even bigger fashion right after Thanksgiving at the same property, the Keeler property, an enchanted Christmas village, which will run all through the season.
It will, November 25th through December 31st.
And that's even more Christmassy, I would guess, than what we're going to see tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow is the preview of what's to come. We have put in tens of thousands of lights that will be installed, and this enchanted Christmas village truly is like a little mini Disney. It's just massive that's going to be out here. There's nothing like it in this area.
Now, I did not know this, but the Keeler property boasts Jacksonville's only covered bridge.
Yes.
Interesting. And what's the history of the Keeler property?
Well, it's privately owned. The gentleman who and my partner who owns this property has kept it as just, as you said, special event space. But we have decided that Jacksonville has this incredible need, and since Santa chose it, we are choosing it. So
you're not going to go against the man in red. Yeah,
I can't go against him, and he had this vision, and I'm hired just to make it happen.
And now, is Mrs. Claus going to make an appearance as well? I hope.
Yes.
And some elves even.
Yes, Mrs. Claus will be there tomorrow, and then his head lead elf from the North Pole will be there.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell.
That's too bad.
No.
That's just a shame. But that's okay, because I think this is fun. And in the middle of summer, this kind of gives us a little taste of what we all look forward to, cooler temperatures and holiday hustle and bustle. So,
and we'll have snow cones. So if everyone's worried about being too hot, we're going to have snow cones and hot dogs and face painters and balloon artists and lots of fun stuff. And again, it is free.
Yeah, this is free. And this is tomorrow at the Keeler property, Christmas in July.
10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
10 a.m. to 1. Bring the kids out to this enchanted Christmas village on Jacksonville's west side at 17255 Normandy Boulevard. This is so much fun, and have fun out there. Bring me back some goodies. Maybe I'll just be out there myself. Ann Urban, thanks so much for joining us. And go to JacksonvilleChristmas.com for more information.
Or visit our Facebook at Enchanted Christmas Village.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chepchik. Questions or comments are always welcome. Send your feedback to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast at iTunes and Stitcher, and watch the show with video on demand at our partner, tvjax.com. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.